Hello, hello. Welcome to Pod Bless Texas. I'm Lillian Salerno here in the North Texas region in Frisco, Texas, with my colleague and friend, Kendall Scudder.
Hi, how are you?
And we're excited to be here on this Friday, September 11th, and we have our awesome co-anchor, our third mic, Mahala.
It was closer this time than ever before. So
the show probably five times, and every single time.
I do love the name.
Well, it's okay. If she gets it right ever, I'm going to be offended because it means it's just getting too.
You know that I do actually. I misspell people's names in my phone that I adore because Kendall Scudder is under Kendall Scrutter. My friend is on Big Ed, and I have Lulu in here under Lulette, so I get all kinds of people. So it's a sign of affection.
I am so excited to be back. Thank you so much for having me. The last time I was on, we were in a studio. We were making fun of coronavirus.
And how did that pan out?
You were on the episode when we were talking about it. That's right.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, we were like, can't get it from drinking Corona, but you sure as hell can spread it.
for those who aren't familiar with Mahala from our previous episode, or maybe newer listeners, Mahala is a Texas legislature aficionado. She's worked in the Texas House for a couple sessions at this point, and is known for her efficacy and making sure she gets bills passed. So, welcome back to the show, Mahala. We're glad to have you.
Very much. I'm so appreciative. Thank you so much for having me. How have y'all been? How is quarantine treating you guys?
Well, now that I know that we're looking straight down the barrel of a Ted Cruz Supreme Court nomination, I've never been, you know, more motivated.
It's like a list of the, I don't know, the worst, really.
I'm gonna die. This cannot get any worse.
Every day this guy does something. One thing about Trump is like he just gets up. His energy, if we could focus it on good, not evil, could be an amazing. It's a superpower that he has. He goes in a back room and comes out with so much distraction.
I don't know. It's like 2020 is one hell of a ride. I don't know if I should put my hands up or I should be like, get me off. It's bad. It's bad.
Or take the roller coaster owner to small claims court.
I don't know. I sometimes wake up lately like, and I don't normally wear a lawyer prism. I am a lawyer, but I think about it. Just seems like all of us have a cause of action against this president. Like he's ruining our quality of our life. He's made false promises. I was just thinking about a Deceptive Trade Practice Act. The American public sat here and listened to the fact that everything was going to be okay with COVID, even though he knew it, so he had intention, and he's really committing crimes against us. So I feel like I want off the train.
It's kind of hard not to sit back and think, you know, it's 9/11 and everybody remembers where they were at when 9/11 happened, right? And we're sitting in the middle of a pandemic. And I think that in generations to come, people will sit and they will think, you know, where was I? What was I doing when the great pandemic of 2020 hit? And, you know, this president likes to think of himself as a wartime president. He likes was comparing himself to
Winston Churchill.
Winston Churchill earlier this week saying he's a wartime president, and when he was telling the people stay calm and this and that. And it's kind of, you know, as somebody who studied history, it's kind of sad to sit here and think this. I mean, the British people were asked to turn their lights off when the bombings were happening, when Germany was bombing nightly. They were asked, turn your lights off.
There's no way.
Could you imagine in today's date, our president would be the one with the lights on? The non-mask wearers would be the ones in protest with their lights on. Could you imagine?
You can't tell me to turn my light off. I want trick-or-treaters to always see my door. I don't care if there's a pandemic or a war.
What are they
saying? You know, so...
I know. It's just this.
So it's really scary. You know, as a granddaughter of immigrants, someone who came here during World War II, I couldn't imagine. She's alive. My grandmother's 91 and kicking, and she sees this man, and she can't believe that he might actually win another term as president. I mean, I see the signs. I saw the Trump boat catch on fire in Austin, like. There are supporters out there that take him seriously and do not think that the COVID-19 leader we've had is bad. They think it's
great. I know that Hillary Clinton gets a lot of bad rap from a lot of folks, and that she's not always the most popular person. But I feel like we're always looking back, looking at things Hillary Clinton warned us was going to happen, and then it happens. I mean, the woman's a smart person who is very in tune with what's going on. And I just want to say, she was 100% right. They're fucking deplorables. Every one of them.
The Nostradamus of our time.
Well, I don't know about you, Mihaela, but I know, well, Kendall and I are both from rural parts of Texas, but it's very hard to be civil to family and friends that really are still on board with Trump. For me personally, I can't do it. I can't be in a room. I can't do social media. Not that I do that much, but this idea that one could rationalize that he should get 4 more years just because they hate Democrats, I think I just can't do it. And it's really put strain on lots of relationships. And I know all over the country this is happening, but I just don't know how to get my head around it. I mean,
yeah. And you know, I've been there. I've definitely unfollowed a bunch of friends and family who have posted just crazy untruths. However, you know, as like I said, as we sit back and kind of think about where we were 19 years ago today, I like to remember where we were on September 12th, 19 years ago. And that was a time where we came together. You know, the stores, they were completely sold out of the American flag. You couldn't buy an American flag nowhere could you buy. Well, there wasn't really much of Amazon back there, but you know, you couldn't buy an American flag. Everyone had the American flag. Everyone was hugging. Neighbors were going and checking in on neighbors.
That's in January.
What?
That's going to be us in January. We're all going to be flying flags again. I'm so excited.
Yeah, you know, and so, but we didn't care. Like back then, I don't remember us talking about like, do you watch Fox? Do you watch CNN? Are you, you know, a Republican? It wasn't about that. And it's sad because we were so unified then, and we were able to do some really great things. And my fear is that if we politicize COVID, if we politicize kind of this atmosphere and we don't talk to one another, it's going to make things worse. It wasn't always everything good that came out of 9/11. We had some pretty bad legislation that came out of 9/11. And if we don't have conversations and bipartisan support, you know, we can have some really bad legislation, some really bad stuff with our healthcare. I mean, it can happen.
Well, yeah. And now here we are, 2020, we're all going to die. Lillian, who's coming on the show today?
Our first special guest today is one of our favorite candidates out in Congressional District 5, which is over in East Texas. Dr. Carolyn Salter is going to be on today.
She's going to come and report to us on her reactions as a medical doctor to the news that Donald Trump lied to the American public in the middle of a pandemic. That will be an interesting conversation.
Can we impeach on that or no?
I think we could literally impeach on anything if we want to do all that again.
We should have just had a file ready for impeachment on just for the end of the year. We could be doing it every day. Instead, we picked the wrong thing. But anyway, the other guest that we have on, we're very excited, is we have Louis Fulbright, who is head of the Dallas AFL-CIO, and is also the head of the U.S. Post Service Labor Union.
Yes, absolutely. So Louis will be joining us to talk about I mean, it was Labor Day this week. We thought it was most appropriate to make sure we heard from someone in the labor community. But also, he's uniquely positioned to talk to us at this moment because of all of that's going on with the post office. So we'll talk to him about, you know, the labor movement, the status of it right now, what their plans are through the election, and ask him lots of questions about the post office and how those workers are doing these days.
Well, one thing is, I think Mahalo will remember, but you were quite a fanboy of getting to go tour the back end of a post office. So maybe, maybe you can ask.
For those OG listeners, when we first started the podcast, I mean, probably in the first five or so episodes, I don't remember when it was. It was the episode we recorded at your brother's house, and I don't remember who the guest was. Anyways, I revealed that I am enamored by the post office, and I still am to this day. The fact that I can drop a letter in the mail in Oakland, California, and for 32 cents, that ship will end up in Portland, Maine in 3 days blows my goddamn mind. And so,
so all this mail ballot stuff has really got you jazzed up.
Huh? Oh, I got to show you some really crazy postal boxes out in Colorado. I go out and fish and hike in Colorado. And, you know, back then in the olden times, they used to just leave mail behind a rock. And that was like the designated like postal drop off.
Leave mail behind the rock.
I swear to you, this is the truth. I speak the truth. Yes.
Coloradans are weird.
They have drop off containers all over. That's the attorney general for Colorado is being, she's amazing, a young female, maybe Mahalia is saying she's just stunning, and she's out there trying to train the entire country on how to vote by mail, and they added like an extra 600.
All their votes.
Just doing amazing. What do they have? Well, over 70% voter turnout.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so. All right, but first, before we have Dr. Carolyn Salter or Louis Fulbright, we must hit the headline. First headline, Trump lied to the American people about the severity of the coronavirus, but told Bob Woodward in a newly released tape as part of Woodward's book called Rage that he knew that the pandemic was deadly.
How many presidents are going to keep talking to Bob Woodward?
If I was president, I would talk to him too. At this point, come on.
Yeah, you have to. And he's in his late 70s, I think. So it's not going to be around forever.
This is huge news, regardless of whether Republicans want you to think or not. What this news is saying is that there are recordings of the president saying, I know people are going to die, but I'm going to lie about it.
And that it's airborne. Mm-hmm. And that it's airborne. And that it's five times deadlier than the flu. And he continued to have rallies. Indoor rallies.
Yeah. I mean, shocking. It is clearly, he says it's because he didn't want to freak people out or whatever. Okay, well, that's stupid, but let's set that aside. I mean, it's clearly personal gain. If people knew it was there, it would hurt his numbers and it would hurt his ability to get out and campaign.
And his whole, I mean, and on the tape, he talks about not wanting to create a panic. Instead of creating a panic, he's just caused us to live through, 6 months of just abysmal survival, no knowledge, no information, no tools to get through it. And he's just been the worst.
I wish everybody would have panicked early. Imagine if people had panicked early, put their goddamn masks on and stayed in the house.
Yeah, for 4 weeks, we'd probably be good. Yep.
The thing is that the leadership failed from the top to the bottom. States were not, they were listening to the feds. We should have, as a state, we should have locked down. We should have not made it political. And now we're sending our kids back to school. And I don't know if you guys have seen the PPE that has been provided to the schools, but the quality is not the same across the board. And I don't think it's intentional, but I'm just saying, you know, that's because there were weak supply lines. And we weren't being provided the equipment we needed from the feds when we needed.
As Lillian would say, and I need to get this in because we get it in every episode. It's just a failure of leadership.
Failure. Yeah, I mean, it didn't have to be this way. It didn't have to be.
But, you know, what did we have to lose, right?
Well, we lost.
The best economy on the planet.
We've lost so much, but mostly we've lost the trust. We were already at our very institutions are at risk at every level. And now I don't know how we get back there where people trust the government, trust institutions, trust state governments. I mean, why would you after this?
Well, I mean, and I think that that's why you see such a disconnect between the response in the United States and the response in the rest of the world. We don't have a social contract in the United States. We don't have a contract between government and the people to kind of create this trust. It's always kind of been, you know, keep the government out of my bedroom, keep the government out of my guns, you know, the government out of my health insurance. And I think that this is going to show weaknesses in those parts of our economy that maybe we should relook at. You know, I'm not saying we should be socialist, but, you know, if you're not worried about your healthcare going away, you know, if you're not worried about these things, then you're not going to have, I don't know if you guys have read this, but depression is on all-time rise. Mental health is all-time rise. We are a state that is highly underinsured. What are we going to do? What are we going to do when these people start going back to work, when these kids start going back to school? We have no plan how to prepare Texas for reopening.
Yep.
Low key, nothing was better for my mental health than COVID. I loved it.
I don't love it.
I loved getting quarantined. I'm secretly hoping we get to quarantine again.
All right. Headline. Oh, go ahead, Mahela.
No, but it's not just like, oh, quarantine. It's our lives have been changed. There's relationships that are falling apart because you're seeing your best friends are going out partying while you're trying to be careful and concerned for the rest of society. You have infighting between families. People aren't seeing their loved ones that are in these healthcare facilities, state-run healthcare facilities for weeks. And it's not just the elderly, it's younger people too. It's people in their 20s and 30s that live in these facilities with disabilities that being kept away from their families. It didn't have to be like this. Right. And we should hold our elected officials accountable in November for what's happened.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Vote. All right, second headline. Governor Abbott held a press conference yesterday to denounce cities that cut their police budgets. Talk about politicized.
I was talking to Lillian about this before we were recording. I think that the Democrats really bungled the messaging on this one, as we typically do.
We're not good at it.
Okay.
But we also, that now the Texas Democratic Party's come put together a two-page pledge sheet talking about how candidates are not defunding the police, but why we let defund police stick on our backs versus the fact that we needed police reforms to reflect communities and mental health counselors and stuff. The defund police is just a non-negotiable thing that we cannot be talking about it like that.
Well, the thing is,
to win, it's not even true.
Yeah, defund the police isn't even what we're doing. Like, so why would people call it that? It is modernizing police budgets to reduce tax burdens. You could modernize a police burden or budget and give tax cuts to people if you wanted to do it, or you could reinvest it into different areas of your community. We could have messaged this so much better than we did. I think it just came at us so quickly that, you know.
And Austin didn't even do that. It wasn't called defund the police. When you look at their budget, it wasn't that.
And you know, the Republicans, you got to give credit to the Republicans. Very, very good at this. They've done this, they do it all the time, but specifically they did this last session with the born alive abortion messaging that they were doing. Yes. You know, they take a Democratic idea and they spin it And sometimes you have to understand that what we're talking about, what our platform talks about, is a little bit above the heads of what the normal person every day is talking about. So when you say something is defunding, well, technically, yeah, it is defunding, because a budget is a moral contract that a city or a state makes with its people. When you look at a budget, you see what is a priority in that state, what is a priority in that city. And, you know, with Greg Abbott, I understand what he's saying, but he's not being honest, because if you look at Austin, for instance, they have the highest police budget in the state. And even if they were to cut a portion of that budget, it would only make them equal to the budgets in Dallas or Houston or San Antonio. Yeah. So if for him saying that we're going to penalize cities that are cutting police budgets, it's once again being cheeky with the facts. And, you know, Democrats need to anticipate these things. And, you know, the House Democratic Caucus has come out. Chairman Turner, Chairman Coleman have all put out press releases and statements saying that is not what we intend to do. We had never any intention of defunding the police. They weren't as eloquent as what the Texas Democratic Party put out about that this is political bullshit. But, you know, there's something to be said about the fact that we need to stop getting, like, it's literally the Republicans going, look over there. And everybody looking over there.
Grasping at straws. Yeah. Best of luck to you, Greg Abbott. You're on your way to get your ass kicked in 22.
Yeah, for sure. All right, next headline. The West Coast is on fire in climate emergency. In California and Oregon, the sky is burnt orange. These are the worst wildfires on record. And the president of the United States in D.C., are in Congress is just, you're on your own. They literally are not even addressing these, which should be these are federal forests.
Yeah, this doesn't surprise me. When we had the most expensive tornado rip through the middle of Dallas, the most expensive tornado in Texas history rip through the middle of Dallas, we did not get any federal money for that. Yeah. So it does not shock me or surprise me that this is happening. You know, Donald Trump is making it a priority to make it again, you know, Republican governors against Democratic governors. And that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to make Democratic states and cities look like they're failing.
It's so awful. And you just can't help but just feel so bad for those folks. And it has given us some really great memes about gender reveal parties, though. And that's really exciting.
Oh, gosh. Well, I just, my heart just goes out to all these families that are being displaced. I mean, it's like a no man's land in huge swaths of Oregon and California.
I mean, I saw somewhere where they were talking about how there are areas of the state that have started doing controlled burns similar to what the Native Americans used to do. Mm-hmm. Oh, who knew? Turns out they knew exactly what the fuck to do. Huh?
Yeah. Well, we because the Congress would never, for the Forest Service comes under the USDA. When I was with the government at USDA, it was just a fight every time to get enough funding for forest fires. But what's particularly amazing is that the U.S. president tweeted to Gavin Newsom, a blue state, you know, governor of California, that, you know, sure would have been nice if he would have kept his forest clean so this couldn't have happened, instead of and insulting him when it's the U.S. federal government that pays for forest fires. And Gavin Newsom and the state of California, no one is more convinced of climate change than the state of California. Yeah. And have it in every kind of a document and building code. And we, the president just mocking these blue state governors is just repulsive, really.
Yeah.
All right. Next headline, the federal court blocks Texas Democrats' attempt to expand vote by mail.
Hooray.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's it.
And that was Hit the Headline. And when we come back, we'll chat with Dr. Carolyn Salter. And then after that, Lewis Fulbright from Dallas AFL-CIO.
Stick around. Welcome back to Pod Bless Texas. With us today is one of my favorite candidates for Congress here in Texas, Dr. Carolyn Salter in Texas's 5th Congressional District. Welcome to the show, Carolyn.
Thank you morning, Kendall. It's always fun to be here. You're such a hoot, you and Lillian.
I like to think that we're a hoot and a half. Yeah,
hoot and a half. Definitely.
You know,
definitely a hoot.
You, Dr. Carolyn Salter, you have always been a huge supporter of the podcast. You're actually a patron for the podcast. And so, you know, you're a big supporter of the PodBless community. I hope that they're also equally supportive of you too.
Yes. Well, I hope so too. You've got a great show, you guys. And I listen to it every week or every time you have it on.
So, Carolyn, you're running out in East Texas and Congressional District 5, and that was the seat held for a long time by the infamous
Jeb
Hanserling. It was gerrymandered just for Jeb.
Yes.
And then, he wanted to live in Lake Highlands.
That's what it was, yeah.
And so this district, you've been on the show before. We've talked to you before about this. We wanted to have you back on. You're a former mayor of Palestine, Texas, down in Anderson County, and the district stretches all these rural counties up into Dallas. But we wanted to have you on because of the news this week that broke about Donald Trump lying about COVID-19 as a doctor. What was your reaction whenever you heard that news?
Well, I was completely unsurprised. I've been doing COVID-19 talks since I think it was February. At first I was doing every day and I go, oh, I can't do this. This is too much. And then it was twice a week and now it's once a week. And I do my COVID-19 talks on Mondays at 1:30, and I do issues on Fridays at 1:30, and I did one about health and climate change today. And I knew that the COVID-19 thing was probably coming to the United States unless China got right on it back in December. So it wasn't at all surprising to me. I just thought he didn't understand, you know, that he just wasn't really like smart enough or something. I'm not sure.
No, you erred on the side of that.
Yeah, I was erring on the side of kindness, you know, that he really just didn't understand what he was saying. Because I do think a lot of times he does that. He just doesn't, he just thinks the secret is real and that he could just make the universe appear in whatever form he wants it to be. And I think that's why he had that interview with Bob Woodward, is because he thought he could charm Bob Woodward into not, you know, into telling him whatever he wanted Bob Woodward to say. And of course, you know, he doesn't tend to work that way. And and so whenever he did, you know, admit, yeah, I knew it was bad. Yeah, I didn't, you know, I didn't want to cause a panic. I got, you know, I used to be a mayor, and I was a mayor during two hurricane responses. And I did like almost 100 hours of emergency training. And the first thing they tell you is, don't lie. You know, be upfront, be available, don't lie, give people information and tools to work with. Well, he did the exact opposite of that, which was just not helpful at all. You know, in fact, I go, why aren't they telling people to wear masks? So on my COVID-19 update, a week before the CDC said anything, I said, you know what, you guys? I think you should start wearing a mask out in public. And people, some of my followers go, I heard you say that, and I started doing it. I said, good for you. I'm so glad you did that. Because frankly, I think us wearing masks, the half of us that wear masks, that's what's keeping the other half that don't believe in them and thinks it's a hoax or a myth. I love using air quotes, they're fun. that's why the caseload's been low. But let me tell you, I mean, it is going down in some places, but we have an ICU full of COVID-19 patients on ventilators. So here in Palestine. And it is getting better in some of the big cities. Their case rates are dying off. No, I did. That's the wrong way to put that. Their case rates are going down. People are still dying, but they have responded in a much more aggressive way in the metro areas with enforcing social distancing, wearing masks, encouraging hand washing, making sure those facilities are available, and limiting the size of gatherings and encouraging them to be outside. You know, a couple of myths about some of the things they've talked about in the past is, you know, the Black Lives Matter protests are not causing any kind of spike in caseloads because people are wearing masks and they're outside. Also, with a few exceptions, standing in lines at polls, if you follow the rules and you do what you're supposed to, you should be able to vote in person safely if you cannot vote by mail or you don't feel that your vote will be counted if you do vote by mail, which I believe that it will be, okay? And I'll talk about that on my COVID-19 updates. But I think that he was foolish to talk to Bob Woodward. He was foolish to lie to the American people. And the fact that he lied meant a whole lot more people died.
Yeah.
And that makes me really, really sad because there was a lot of unnecessary loss of life in this country and loss of economic capacity to rebound from when we did have to stay in quarantine.
So let's transition a little bit. So from we know that Donald Trump is a liar, and your opponent, who is Congressman Lance Gooden, has been behind him 100% of the way. I mean, he's completely reaffirming, even withdrawing and removing funding for the World Health Organization. You know, how is your campaign going? How are people in your district responding to that?
Well, you know, we don't really talk about Lance very much because he's not doing very much. I think his latest thing was a rare earth minerals bill, and he spent a lot of time attacking China about the virus, but he doesn't have much of a presence in the district. He hasn't held any town halls. I haven't heard about any Zoom meetings. He has sent out some mailers and he has sent out some emails, but he's really just, most of the people I talk to don't know who the representative in Congress is. So I consider that to be a singular problem, not only with a lack of knowledge about the district, but they just, I mean, they know they have somebody in Congress, but they don't know who it is. You know, I'm hoping I could do a much, much better job.
No, we know you can. You've already proven yourself when you were very beloved mayor. What is the Donald Trump piece when he spoke to Woodward about trying to hide information from the American public? What does that say to you about leadership? I mean, what is the component that you possess that you think people can go to sleep at night knowing that somebody's watching out for their well-being?
Well, I think his son said something about him that was particularly interesting. You know, he said, if you want to understand my father-in-law or my father, you have to understand, oh no, actually, maybe it was Jared Kushner, I'm not sure. One of them, I get them confused.
They all run together.
He's got his whole family there, so it's hard to do.
But he mentioned a Cheshire Cat analogy, and that particular phrase from Alice in Wonderland was, if you don't know where you're going, any path will get you there. Well, if you're in a crisis as a leader, you need to be like at least three things. One is informed, with good scientific facts, basic factual evidence, either from whatever's going on with the hurricane or the pandemic or whatever it is. And you need to be honest with your constituents, right? And then you need to have a plan, and you need to have a team to help you execute that plan, because you cannot be in leadership by yourself. You always have to have a competent team. And yeah, that's another area of leadership where I think, you know, Trump has fallen down. He had some good ones at the beginning, and they all go, oh my God, I gotta get out of here. So, and they left.
That tends to happen with bad leadership. The staff tend to leave. The good staff, at least. No, but yeah, I totally agree with you. And the problem is that we're asking these things of a man that can't give these things to himself. You know, he's never honest with himself. How is he ever going to be honest with us? And when there is no plan, you know, that's when you have leaders going out telling the public not to wear masks because they're afraid you're going to have a shortage of masks. We already had a shortage of masks. The state was competing with other states to acquire PPE for us. There was not enough stuff going around. I don't think the state leadership even knew what a supply chain for that kind of material even looked like. So when those run out, you know, that's where you need to have plan B, plan C. And this is a man who is a narcissist. He lies to himself. We can't expect, he will never rise to the occasion, as we've heard and we've observed. So yeah, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that the people that follow behind him don't reach out to their constituents and aren't present in their districts. And, you know, the fish rots from the top.
Yeah, that's so true.
Does that mean that when Lance Gooden puts signs in your district, is he going to put the word Republican on it? Because I've noticed some around this part of the North Texas area, Dallas and other places, the Republicans haven't been putting Republican on their signs. So anyway.
Well, I think he pretty much owns Republican here. Yeah. I don't think he shies away from that at all.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, if ignorance is bliss, right? But, go ahead, sorry.
Well, the other thing I wanted to say was Trump wasn't alone in his lack of leadership. It also occurred here, you know, in Texas, because the governor is in charge of the disaster response situation. And I actually think our mayor and our county judge did a good job locally, but then... You know, the Republicans have gotten into this away from local government into this central government theme, and he stripped away local control for a lot of that. When our county has five prisons in it, you know, and the response from the prisons, I don't think they really understood what was going to happen with this pandemic very early on, and they weren't communicating. You know, amongst the different groups, you know, the county judge and the mayor were talking, but they couldn't really get to the head of the TDCJ very easily. And then the RAC, which is what provides services. There are RACs all across the state, and they provide us with PPE on request. Well, we requested it very early on because, I mean, I had two stacks of N95 masks in my garage just for something like this. Well, we ran through those like that, and there weren't any more. In fact, when I called, I had my office call, they just laughed at us. But then they got on it, you know, and about a month later, we had our supplies. We had to drive to Totter to get them. So the response was incredibly slow, and the reason for that is that Texas has dismantled the public health system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. Well, I have to tell you, East Texas would be lucky to have a congresswoman like you representing them, who's so knowledgeable and so committed to her community. Dr. Carolyn Salter, whether she likes it or not, the official doctor of Pod Bless Texas, chief medical correspondent for Pod Bless Texas. If people wanted to follow you or your campaign or support it, where would they go to do that?
Well, they can go to salterforcongress.com. And also I want to mention that I did a big voter registration outreach through an email outpouring and also private donations. And we sent out 5,000 voter registration cards in my district.
Just in your district.
Wow. Fantastic.
And who were those two?
Those were two unregistered voters that had moved in here and had a history of voting where they came from. But when they moved here, they hadn't registered yet. So we're reaching out to them to remind them that they need to get registered.
And if they're 65 and older, they can do it by mail. So get
or
that.
Disabled.
And imagine if, you know, people in districts all over the state did that kind of work. That kind of grassroots work's amazing. Keep up the good work. You're doing the Lord's work. And we look forward to having you on when you're a congresswoman next year.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Doctor.
When we come back, we will have Lewis Fulbright, who is the new secretary of the Dallas AFL-CIO and the head of the United States Postal Workers Union. He's going to talk to us a little bit about what's going on at the post office and how it's affecting the post office workers. So stick around.
Welcome back to Pod West Texas. We're so excited to have with us today the Secretary Treasurer of the Dallas AFL-CIO, Lewis Fulbright.
Yay!
Happy to have you, Lewis, and happy post-Labor Day to you.
All right, thank you. You know, I'll start off by telling you that I'm Lewis Fulbright. I'm a Vietnam vet, a disabled vet. I spent 39 years in the Postal Service. I retired in 2009, had 48 years as a postal APW officer. I've had several positions, human relations director, secretary, treasurer, trustee. At the present time, I'm secretary, treasurer for the Dallas AFL-CIO, plus I have two other titles, which is the president of Dallas Retirees for APW, which we have about 500 members. Mm-hmm. And I'm also the president of Texas APW Retirees, which has about 2,600 members.
You're a busy man.
Wow.
To tell me.
Calls.
And you know, like now, one of the big things that I push is vote by mail, especially for people over 65. And I happen to be 72. So I will push that.
Are you going to be voting by mail this time?
Yes, I voted by mail the last 6-7 years.
Good, good, good. I guess you have a lot of confidence in the post office, huh?
Yeah. I'm retired from them, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. First of all, I'd like to say that when most people say the post office is bankrupt, I would like to explain to everyone that the post office is not in bankrupt. The post office has the problem because of a 2006 law that established the fund, Postal Service Retiree Health Benefits for 75 years down the line in 2006 by a lame duck Republican representatives when Bush was going out of office. And what I'd like to explain is, trust me, the Postal Service, it was for $5.6 billion per year for 10 years. Once I saw that, I called Washington, our legislative department, asked them what the, you know, happened. They said the post office said they could afford it. The post office always been the cow that bought the milk for the federal government, trust me. So the post office paid it for 5 years, which was a total of $28 billion. The economy dropped.
Yeah.
2010, 2011, right along in there, 2009. Post office decided, we ain't paying this no more. They said, no cooperation our business has ever been had to do that. So the post office quit paying it. Now, if you go back and look, if the post office was not paying that $5.6 billion a year, they would have made a profit for all these years.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
Yes. The post office only gets money from the sale of products. The government and taxpayers does not finance the post office.
I didn't know that.
Now, the post office, when this stimulus thing come up, the post office told them, they told the post office, you are essential. You must continue to work and deliver the mail. Post office told them, hey, we can't do it unless we get some of this buyout money that you're giving to the corporations. If you remember, Trump told them, we won't give them nothing unless they cut all their ties with Amazon. Amazon, you know, he hates their director. And he says that the post office is giving Amazon some good deals, which they shouldn't be giving them, so we ain't gonna give them nothing. The Senate and Congress passed a bill for $25 billion to the post office to keep their people in place. Trump cut it to 10 and told them, you either take that or you get nothing.
You know what's remarkable about all this to me, Lewis, is that I can't think of another agency that even has the ability to generate revenue like that. Like
the patent office.
The patent office. The fact that like we even expect the post office to not lose money. I mean, it's a service. It's not intended to be a private business.
Yeah, it's a service that affects every individual in the United States.
Right.
Right. And if the corporation would have had to put their pension.
What Trump and the Republicans want to do is privatize the post office.
Right.
If they privatize it, they're going to take off the ones that can make money. The big cities like Dallas, Chicago, LA, they can make money.
Right.
But if you look at, you know, the rural towns, rural cities, and they've had a lot of cuts already. One of the cuts they have is, you know, for example, say if you take, I don't know if you guys are familiar with East Texas.
Very.
I mean, I'm originally from Paris, Texas.
You're from Paris? Paris Junior College. I know where that is.
From Paris. I took my first three college classes at Paris Junior College.
Aww.
Yeah. And if you look at the rural towns, for example, I just take, you know, the little towns like Payne, Texas, Tube, Texas, et cetera. They only have probably one person working in the post office. But the people at the post office look forward to getting their mail every day because the post office would come to everybody. Now, if they didn't, for example, I mean, I'm a veteran. Veterans get their mail, get their medicines through the mail. And if you cut that off, a lot of people are going to be hurt.
Yeah.
Now, when they bought in this new Postmaster Jones, the Joy, I believe, was his name. You know, I don't like to say his name. But start taking out the blue boxes. The blue boxes is ones where you can drop the mail anywhere and they pick it up that day. If you drop it in by a certain time, they'll pick it up and be processed that day. Now, for example, if I send a letter, say, down to Ken, say, down in East Texas, if I put it in the mail by 5 o'clock today, he would get it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Now, if I put it in by 5 o'clock today, if he gets it Monday or Tuesday, we're doing good. Simply because they don't process, they don't have the next day delivery in the SCFs anymore.
I got a question for you, man. Okay, on this show, I have regularly talked about how impressed I am with the fact that the post office can do what it does, because I'm floored by it. How does that work? I take a letter, okay? I put it in a mailbox. What happens to it?
Like Santa Claus.
I know. I mean, like, to me, it's magic. I don't understand it.
What mailbox you put it in? Just tell me.
Let's say I put it in one of those blue boxes in an East Dallas post office. What happens to that letter? How does it get there so fast?
And they pick it up, which is normally about 5 o'clock in the evening.
Okay.
Later, 6. But if it's in there, then it should be processed and postmarked that day. Before, they had the next day delivery, anything within, you know, a 200-mile radius. Now they have a 3-day delivery. Simply because the Postmaster General changed that delivery status. They also have taken out several machines that's processed mail. Now, when you put the mail in there, you know, most people is still under the concept that they sit at the cage and work the mail. That has not happened in several years. It's all automated. I call it automated, which means when you drop your mail in the box, they pick it up to throw it all in one big sack. They take it, they're going to take your mail, normally will go to Capella. It will go to Capella, they will sort it out. They will send it through two machines. The first machine that they have is going to read the address on it and put a barcode on it. The second machine is going to read that barcode and sort it straight to your carrier.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's nuts to me.
But it's working well.
Yeah.
But people talk about vote by mail and all the challenges we have in Texas because of our history of voter suppression and being, I guess, 49 out of 50th on lowest voter turnout, when sort of the confusion and the discourse on vote by mail, are you would you tell your family to vote by mail if they qualified, or would you say, you know what, this year, let's all get in line?
I suggest everyone should vote by mail that can. And if you're over 65, you could automatically vote by mail. If you have a valid reason, all you got to do is say you won't be available on voting day or whatever. You can vote by mail and request it. I suggest everyone do it simply because what if the weather gets bad on voting day? What if they have a long line? No one wants to stand in line, no way, because, you know, if they're doing the 6 feet away and all that, so they're going to extend the line. I suggest everyone vote by mail that can. And also, my thing is vote early. Once you get your ballot, send it in. Don't wait until, you know, the week before to say, okay, I got plenty of time. Hey, you know who you're going to vote for. Let's be realistic. And let's go ahead and get those ballots in. And those ballots, I like to say that 95% of them will be counted without any problems. There's going to be problems with everything. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you that 100% all of them be counted, because I know they won't. Okay. But yeah. I would say 95% of them would.
So, we've gone over the post office a bit. Let's talk about your new role in the Dallas AFL-CIO and in the labor community. You know, labor has always been so great to, you know, candidates that fight for working people, and lately that's been Democrats. You know, what are y'all's plans, you know, just kind of as a Texas or Dallas area movement throughout this election, and what can people do to help y'all in those efforts?
We have a statewide campaign that we're doing. Uh-huh. And what most people don't realize is the last election, had Trump not been able to carry Texas, if we had turned Texas blue, Trump would not be the president. Texas has 38 votes. Those 38 votes would have switched the whole thing. And that's what we're looking at now. That's why we're doing a concentrated thing. I was just talking to Rick Levy today. Rick Levy is president of Texas AFL-CIO. And we are doing a concentrated, and really it's in Dallas. Because, you know, we turned 6 new representatives in Dallas last year. We're shooting for 8 this time, 8 more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. So we are really pushing it. And if we can get that, trust me, we can turn Texas blue and Trump wouldn't have a chance.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah, I think that right now is talking about the workforce is extremely essential in getting Texas back and running. You know, it's shocking whenever you see the reports, 4% of the restaurant closures, 4 to 8% of the national restaurant closures are in our state. Childcare, we've lost 40% of our daycare centers, childcare centers in our state. You know, these are people that people are deeming essential, yet we're losing them. And I mean, it's crazy to think that we are not putting these people first. And I just applaud you and thank you for your service, you know, not just in the military, but in the postal service and everything that you're doing with our unions, because they really are the backbone of our state. They are what is keeping us moving. And I just couldn't thank you enough.
Thank you.
And Lewis, if people wanted to follow you or the work that the Dallas AFL-CIO is doing or any of the organizations that you're in, where can they go to follow you and get more information on that?
You can go to dallasaflcio@gmail.com.
Okay.
And my publicity director, Gene Lance, I don't know if you know Gene.
Yeah, I know Gene.
Yeah, Gene's been around quite a while. As a matter of fact, I was just talking to him before I got on the phone with you.
Too funny.
Gene is the one that's coordinating most of the activities that's happening. Now, what we're looking to do here in the Dallas area, and when I say the Dallas area, I look at Dallas, Fort Worth, Collin County, East Texas, the whole nine yards. I want to put a voting pamphlet in every working family's hand for them to take to the box with them. I was just, that's what I was talking to Gene about. He said, Lewis is going to cost us about $11,000. I told him that's $11,000, that'd be well spent.
Yeah.
To get it into everyone's hand.
That's great.
So that's one of the things we're working on with Riley Eccles Plant. But we got to make sure. And, you know, I called Lorraine down in Austin, and I got Mariah. I don't know if you know Mariah, Mariah Woodrick. Mariah is doing the political work, and I've given her access to land. What land is, it shows everybody that's voted in the past, you know, 10 years. So I'm telling Mariah, Mariah, put your list together. She said, well, I'm not sure if I know how. I said, if you don't, let me know. I'm going to show you how to do it, because I want you to pick out these people now. If they voted Republicans, don't waste our money with them. Just send it to the ones that voted Democrat. And all you got to do is, you know, you put it in the computer, right, and it'll spit it out right. I say, but if you put bullshit in the computer, you're going to get bullshit out of it.
That's right. And that's the thing.
I'm straightforward.
No, you're right. I mean, it used to be where you could, you know, go to either side and there were good people there. But this election, it's not left and right. It's right or wrong. I mean, it's just.
So if you got a Republican that's voting right, hey, let's support that Republican.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just hard to find on the
candidates. 50% right, let's support him. Because that means he's ready to switch over.
Yeah. Well, Lewis, we just appreciate you and all that you do to help our movement here, to help working people. And I'm sure Dallas AFL-CIO has a website. Y'all are on Facebook. I hope folks go to check that out. But don't leave yet, because we still have one more segment. Before you go, we're going to play everybody's favorite segment. It's called Obsessed. Okay. Where each of us will talk about one news story from the week, whether it was politics or it wasn't, that we've been completely obsessed with. And as always, we have to start this segment with Lillian Salerno. Lillian, what's something this week you've been completely obsessed with?
I guess I've been obsessed with the forest fires and wildfires in the West this week. And part of the challenge also, other than just the pure woman manpower of trying to put these fires out and recognizing the importance of climate change to what's going to be a regular thing from here on out, the experts are saying, is the media's role. And the reason I talk about Facebook and the fact that I don't use Facebook or and have been very concerned about Facebook for a lot of years is currently, there's no entity that can shut Facebook down when there's false reports on Facebook saying that these forest fires are being initiated by Antifa. Mm-hmm. And currently, there's no agency that has really the rights, other than Facebook doing their own self-regulation, of just the craziest stuff that causes Americans to just believe things that are completely false. And it has just turned our country into a real shit show because we have no way to determine what's news or not. And it's created this hollowed out news, no more newspapers, where Facebook has this amazing control, and they and Google have got to be regulated. And I wish we had a real attorney general in the state of Texas instead of the sandbag guy that we have to file suit against these organizations that have just turned our political system into complete horseshit. So that's I'm just sick.
They have way too much influence.
Way too much. And no regulation and no competition. So that's what happened. They need oversight for sure.
Good obsessed, Lillian Salerno.
Yes.
Good obsessed. Lewis Fulbright, what's something this week that you've been completely obsessed with?
Our governor. Saying what he will do. I mean, you know, first of all, they came up with the thing about the schools. If you didn't score school back, they were going to withhold the taxes. Well, if you want to defund the police force officers, which I don't think no one wants to defund them. I mean, let's be realistic. But he's saying if you do, we're going to roll your taxes back and you're not going to be able to increase any property taxes. So they're doing a stronghold on people about things that's not real. But, you know, the whole thing is they're doing this is taking it away from the fact that he didn't do anything about the COVID-19 when it first came out, when he had a chance to. He said it wasn't no big problem. He listened to his president, who said it was no problem, that it's something that would pass. And yeah, it will pass, but what will it take with him? Look at the lives it took with him.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, their thing is, okay, let's penalize these people with taxes.
Yeah. I mean, it's like they used to be a party that supported local governments making decisions, and now they are nothing but a centralized government party. It's so weird.
And it's really interesting too, because I understand their fears of the big Democratic cities, you know, Austin, Dallas, San Antonio, Houston, but I mean, it's hurting their small little Republican towns just as much. So we'll see. There's always a lot of legislation and talk around property taxes. You can only cut so much. You can only mess with sales tax and property tax so much before you're kind of picking at nothing. Yeah. And so I don't know, maybe there'll be some more interesting, more creative ways of inducing revenue in the Texas budget next session.
I hope you're right. Good obsessed, Lewis. That was a good obsessed. Mahala, what's something this week you've been completely obsessed with?
Well, I got a little distracted by Cardi B and Candace Owens going at it there for a little bit. But, you know, you can only be distracted so long before you have to go out and get groceries with a mask on, or you can't see your family or friends before you realize the mess that we are in right now. I wish we were sitting in a studio and we could really enjoy ourselves, but no, you know. So I guess I'm obsessed with the fact that in a few short weeks, actually, early voting starts, because the one good thing Governor Abbott has done is he moved up the voting, early voting, so we can vote earlier. So I'm excited about that. And I'm really super excited to see what the legislature is going to put out. I know legislative agendas are starting to be created. There's House members and Senate members that are starting to talk about some pretty, really, really, really exciting legislation for the state of Texas. We saw the TLBC put out their George Floyd bill. We saw Representative Carl Sherman put out Beau's bill. I know there's gonna be tons of more legislation that's going to help change what, you know, the topography of our social issues in Texas. So I'm super excited to start seeing what our organizations that we root for every day, like the LFCIO, the unions, what they're gonna be putting out, what they wanna see legislators focusing on next session. We cannot get distracted and say Governor Abbott's gonna allow a mini session next session, or a reduced session to only focus on, you know, a limited number of bills. It's no, we can't do that. We only meet 140 days every 2 years. We need to take advantage of every one of those days. I would say we shouldn't even, at the beginning, we should hit it full throttle, full weeks, full months there, and let's get the job that our taxpayers or our constituents are sending us out to Austin to do. Like, now is not the time to mess around. And you know, I'm going to miss the lobby dinners and the luncheons and the receptions just as much as anybody else, but that's not what they send us up there for. So, yeah. Or down there for. We really need to get to work on this. There's no room for error. So my obsess is what the heck we're going to do at the beginning of January when all the members meet, you know. There's a whole Freedom Caucus that is suing against contact tracing, right? Like, there is a whole movement in our state against contact tracing. So we'll see what that's going to look like.
It's going to be nuts.
Plexiglass is up on the House floor and in committee rooms. So I'm ready to get to work. And I know a bunch of members are too.
Yeah, that's going to be wild. That's a really great obsess, Mahela. My obsess this week is the election of the new president of the College Democrats of America. Whenever I was in college at Sam Houston State down in Huntsville, the president of College Democrats of America was Katie Naranjo, who is a Texan. It was Katie Naranjo, and then it was Alejandra Salinas, who was also a Texan. Texans kind of had a stranglehold on College Democrats of America for a while, and then we kind of fell out. We hadn't had any leadership roles for a while. Gabby Harris at SFA Democrats out in Stephen F. Austin and Nacogdoches was elected this week as the president of College Democrats of America, and I am just so proud of her and the work that she's doing out there. I've been completely obsessed with it this week. We got a Texan back at the helm at College Democrats of America, and I'm so proud that it came from rural East Texas out in Nacogdoches. Great work, Gabby Harris. That's what I've been completely obsessed with.
Wow. Good for her. Yeah.
And that was Obsess.
And we are so excited to have had you on the show today, Lewis. And we support your work and all the great work that unions do. We have you to thank for things like weekends and days off. And always happy to hear from union folks. And thank you for joining us today. And thank Carolyn Salter for joining us today. Yeah. And we know how to follow Lewis through the AFL-CIO.
Absolutely.
And Mahela, if people want to follow you, how do they get in touch with you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Mika Mahela, or Instagram, same handle, at Mika Mahela.
All right. And Kendall Scudder, how do people want to follow you?
If people wanted to follow me, they can follow me on all the social medias at Kendall Scudder, or they could make sure to follow our podcast at Pod Bless Texas on just about all the social media handles as well. How about you, Lillian?
And through Pod Bless Texas and through the Twitter machine, Lillian _ Salerno. And we thank everybody for being with us today. If you like what you've heard, please take the time to hit subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. And you can find more contact from our team on Facebook and Twitter. And everybody, stay healthy and have a blessed week.
See you next week, y'all.